गुरुर्ब्रह्मा गुरुर्विष्णुः गुरुर्देवो महेश्वरः गुरुस्साक्षात् परब्रह्मा तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। ध्यानमूलं गुरोर्मूर्तिः, पूजामूलं गुरोर्पदं, मन्त्रमूलं गुरोर्वाक्यं, मोक्षमूलं गुरोर्कृपा। सर्वमङ्गलमाङ्गल्ये शिवे सर्वार्थसाधिके शरण्ये त्र्यम्बके गौरी नारायणे नमोऽस्तुते। सृष्टिस्थितिविनाशानां शक्तिभूते सनातने गुणाश्रये गुणमये नारायणे नमोऽस्तुते। शरणागतदीनार्थपरित्राणपरायणे सर्वस्यार्तिहरे देवी नारायणे नमोऽस्तुते। ॐ सहना भवतु, सहनौ भुनक्तु, सह वीर्यं करवावहै, तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। What exactly is meditation? How do we achieve it? One cannot practice meditation. Though we use these expressions, one cannot practice meditation, one has to achieve it, or it has to happen. Meditation has to happen. It's not possible to describe meditation as this is it. That is why, as I tried to explain yesterday, we say God is meditating all the time. Shiva is meditating all the time. It's a thing known only to gods. Because however much one tries, one fails to describe it. Anything that is close to truth is impossible to describe. Therefore, for instance, health you cannot describe. However much you may try, you cannot describe what health actually is. You can only indicate in a roundabout way, it is absence of ill health, it is absence of sickness, it is absence of pain, it is absence of fatigue. It is absence of all these. But is health only an absence of all these? No. Health is something positive. But what is it positively? We don't know. Happiness, you can't describe. Happiness is something which you cannot describe. None of these, love, you cannot describe. None of these positive, what one might call close to the divine factors, can be described as this is it. Even so, meditation cannot be described. One may say meditation is not prayer. Meditation is not emptying the mind, blank, making the mind blank. Meditation is not thinking. Meditation is not feeling. Meditation is not imagination. But what exactly is it? What exactly is it? One doesn't know. When there is a total identity with that you have chosen for your meditation, as an object of meditation, you start by using something as an object of your meditation. But so long as this remains an object, there is no meditation. You are thinking. when the time-space interval between you and the it has been completely and totally eliminated, then there is meditation. It's quite likely, it's as vague as anything else. If you are honest, you'll admit that this is too vague. One doesn't know what it means. One cannot describe it as this is it. So meditation has to happen. And therefore meditation and samadhi are very often likened to sleep. Can anyone describe what sleep is? What is sleep? I have actually tried this. I don't know if you have. I have tried this. One day at about 11 or 12 o'clock at night, I said, I'm going to discover sleep today. That was long ago when I was young and juvenile in my enthusiasm. I'm going to discover what this sleep is. At least what it looks like. And if I can't discover what it looks like, from where it comes, does it come from within me or does it come from outside? It may be sort of a ghost, you know, walking out in through the window and quietly coming and taking charge of me. Or it may develop from within. I want to know. And also, if it enters from outside, how does it enter? Does it enter through my ears or through my nose or through my eyes? And if it is generated from within me, at which point does it start? Like for instance, anyone who has epilepsy may tell you that it has an epicenter. It starts from somewhere and then, you know, it goes round, you have a blackout. So I lit a candle, placed it in front of me. I sat there looking at it. I'm going to be vigilant and watchful. And the moment this sleep takes hold of my right eye, now. Good. So I sat 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, I don't know how long I must have sat. Nothing happened. Absolutely nothing happened. No sleep coming anywhere near. And then I don't know what happened. I did this. Hey, it's gone. I nodded. Then I realized I was sleeping. I woke up. Such a strong man has been cheated by sleep. No, that shall not happen again. I sat down and said, no. As long as I was awake, I was not asleep. And when I was asleep, I was not awake. So I didn't know what happened to me. I don't know how this sleep came. Whether it came from within me or from outside. Even now, I don't know. If such difficulties beset our understanding of sleep, this stupid thing which happens to us every day, how much more difficult it must be to know what happens when we meditate. Even so, in the case of meditation, it is this total surrender of the ego that must precede in order to meditate. So when the ego is gone, who is there to say that I meditated? The space between you and the object of meditation must completely disappear. Then what happens? You become that. Or that becomes you. Then who is meditating? That is meditating, not you. You are not a non-existent. You are completely non-existent. Now, we are still probably playing with words, I might give you a rather crude, shocking example. I don't know if these bushfires are beautiful. Some fires are very beautiful to look at. Fire is something terrible. It burns and destroys. But I have seen some sort of bonfires which are very beautiful, very beautiful. We used to have in Balmoral. One can literally fall in love with such fires, the beauty of it. See the leaping flames and the variety of colors. So beautiful, so beautiful. Supposing a sort of strange man. A Swami could be a strange man. Stands watching a campfire as the flames leap. Ah, so beautiful, marvelous. And the core of the flame is pure blue. It's beautiful. And then it is enveloped again by a sort of white halo. Then red and the glow, all sorts of things. And then the sparks and... Supposing a mad Swami stands there gazing at that campfire. It's so beautiful that he doesn't want to take his eyes away. He cannot be distracted. He refuses to be distracted. Because he's so absorbed in watching it. That is what is called concentration. Concentration is not staring. That is staring, not concentration. Concentration in the initial stages may involve tension, but this tension should soon go. This tension should very soon go when you become an adept in this concentration. There is no longer a tension but a steady flow of consciousness in one direction. There is no longer a muscular tension or a physical or a mental tension. No. As you gain practice in concentration, there is no longer a physical or mental tension, but a definite channelization of consciousness. The consciousness flows in a steady stream. A very beautiful simile is given in some of the yoga texts, which is unsurpassable. Thailadharavat. When you take some oil and pour it from one vessel to the other, watch. Nothing flows so smoothly, so evenly, so continuously as oil poured from one vessel to the other. Not even water. If you watch that, that is what happens in concentration. The mind flows in a continuous stream, unbroken, homogeneous, and it's beautiful. Watch, let the, no Swami need tell you what concentration is. Watch oil flowing from one vessel to the other. That will teach you better. So the Swami is standing there, his mind flowing in a stream towards that fire. And there is concentration. When you are absorbed in looking or in watching something like this, as, for instance, a girl watcher, a boy is watching a girl for some time and then he moves automatically, doesn't he? He can't sit there and watch her forever. So after some time, involuntarily, he gets up and starts moving as though enchanted. So let's say this Swami, that's what happens to the Swami. He stands there watching this campfire, and after some time, as though involuntarily, he starts moving, spellbound, enchanted. And he gets into the campfire now. That state is called meditation. That state, when he is in the campfire, fire above, fire below, fire in front and fire behind, and fire to the right and fire to the left. That state is called meditation. He is still able to move around. Yeah? The campfire is wide enough for him to move around. Meditation is not a static state. Meditation is not upon something. We usually use these expressions for want of better ones. Meditate upon a rose. You know, only one being in the whole world can meditate upon a rose, a bee. I can't meditate upon a rose. If I sit upon a rose, it goes, it's gone. These expressions are inadequate, imperfect. But all expressions are imperfect. In order to meditate, I must enter the rose, get into the rose. Rose above, rose below, rose behind, rose in front, rose to the right, rose to the left. It is then that I am meditating. Then the space-time interval between me and the object of meditation has disappeared. I am part of the object. I am in the object. Then what happens? The Swami is in the fire. Probably after a few seconds or a couple of minutes, the Swami is no longer a Swami there, but he is the fire. In the second stage, or the stage of the state of meditation, there was no time-space interval between the Swami and the fire. But in the third stage, called Samadhi, there is no difference in nature between the Swami and fire. The Swami has become of one nature with the fire. Krishna described it very beautifully in the Gita, Madbhavam. So digacchati. One who meditates upon God becomes God. Madbhavam so digacchati. Madbhava yogapadyate. He becomes Madbhavam. There is not only no time-space interval between the devotee, the meditator and the meditated. But even the characteristics merge. There is no distinction now between the meditator and the object of meditation. the man who was Swami so long has ceased to be the Swami, and he is also a burning log of wood, part of this campfire, part of the campfire. That is called Samadhi. One has to experience this. One has to experience this. All yoga practices are graded exercises. The path that should lead us ultimately to this experience of oneness. It starts with two. It starts with duality, I, you, that you may be anything. But by and by, it must lead to total at-one-ment. It is then that all our sins are burnt, all our different karmas are burnt, etc., etc., anything. There is nothing. I don't exist at all as a separate, distinct entity to suffer, to enjoy. Only when there is this total atonement, that one is never distracted. There are no distractions, there are no obstacles, there are no troubles. He or she who complains, I want to meditate but I am, you know, there are too many obstacles, only betrays that I am not interested. If I am interested, I go to a cinema. Or to see a dance performance. Have you watched people sitting in and watching a dance performance? You can't distract them, can you? Nobody can take their attention away. But it is because I am not interested in this meditation, I am trying, a great word, I am trying to meditate because somebody else told me it's a wonderful thing. And naturally I am distracted. I am not interested in it. If I am interested in it, then nothing in the world will distract me. Also, I think most of us have not realized that meditation is vital to our life. We have not come to that understanding. It is still a sort of lovely pastime, and I am all the time equating meditation with some kind of physical, financial or worldly benefit. I read an article 2 days ago in the newspaper. Some sort of film actress here in Los Angeles saying that because she meditates at sunset every day, her face is relaxed and charming. But that's not the end and aim at all. That's not meditation. That's quite likely she has learned the art of relaxation. Very good. God bless her. But that is not meditation. Meditation is something different. Relaxation is one small part of this meditation. One who even attempts to meditate enjoys this relaxation. Wonderful. But meditation has got a lot more. It has got a spiritual goal. It has nothing to do with material benefits, material goals, worldly goals. As a matter of fact, it is only when a person has seen the terrible danger of leading a worldly life, the futility, the sheer futility of it, it is only then that he can really and truly begin to meditate. Have I seen this danger and the futility of a worldly life? It's only then that I can, my mind can become alert. You have heard of Buddha, I'm sure. Buddha, in his last sermon, just before he passed on, uses an expression which is unsurpassable again for its vividness. He says, live in this world as though you are living in the same room with a cobra. Can you imagine this? Supposing I go into the room, I'm tired, I want to sleep. Supposing I go into the room and then I lie down, I don't want to lift my head at all, I don't even want to make my bed, just jump into the bed and sleep. After about an hour or so, while I'm still asleep, I hear some noise in the room, turn the lights on, I look. And what do I see? Just at the threshold, at the door, there is a big cobra. Will I be able to sleep again? Not for my life. Not for my life. I am sitting there, watching. Do you think I'll even blink? I can't afford to. The cobra is looking at me. The cobra is looking at me. Can I afford to blink? I'm just watching. If the cobra turned, I turned. Huh. Isn't that concentration? Isn't that meditation? Isn't that samadhi? Call it what you like. Everything put in one, it is salvation. Total salvation. The whole night I can sit like that. You think anything will distract me? I may be just married, my wife may be lying down there. I don't even care to look at her. I can't. It's just a cobra. So it is foolish on our part to say that we can't meditate. We can. We can. Unfortunately, in our own life, we have not reached that stage of urgency that a cobra watcher has. And that is why we suffer from all these distractions and these lukewarm attempts at meditation and so on. This urgency must be there. And this urgency will be there only if I have seen the whole world as a cobra, as a live cobra. We see it. We hear about it. We hear these things nearly every day. 2 days ago, I had a letter from South Africa. Someone, a young boy, the only son of his mother, either the widowed or the separated mother, divorced. He was riding a scooter, was involved in an accident, killed. Poor mother, she is distraught. Yesterday or today, you read some girl here was found dead. This thing we are hearing every day. We have become, our soul has become numb. We are not sensitive anymore. Or we pretend or bluff ourselves that this is only happening to other people, it will not happen to us. Yeah? Huh? Only the other fools die. You and I are not, won't die. Isn't that the idea? These are fools who died. We are very clever, aren't we? If death knocks through this door, we will escape through the other door. Where will we run? But we see this. We hear this every day. But we are not prepared to accept it. We are not prepared to see it as truth. To us, it's more information, a newspaper news. It is when you and I are prepared to see this as truth, as fact, as built-in truth. Death, disease, change, these are built-in truth. Built-in to me. I may live a very healthy, long life for another 50 years, okay. Who cares for 50 years? I have already lived 50 years. Another 50 years is going to be just another repetition of what has been. What is this 50 years? Nothing. Only when this is realized as a fact will meditation become possible. It is then that the ego is ready and eager to give up. When the ego has given up, the object of meditation becomes real. That is called realization. To realize is to make real, to make something real. The object that you are meditating upon now is not real to you, is it? You are meditating upon God or the Self or Cosmic Consciousness or Buddha, Shiva, Krishna. It's not real. It's only your imagination. What is imagination? Image in. Imagine. Only a slight trick in spelling. It's just a little trick in rearranging the spelling. Imagine. There is IN inside. Take that out. There is image. Image in is imagine. I am creating an image within myself, that's all. It is my own imagination. It is not real. In my own projection. The projection of my own mind. But if I am able to meditate upon it and then by stages, by practice, first eliminate the space-time interval between that object of my imagination and myself, and later when the ego drops, the object of my imagination alone shines, then it is real. I have realized it. Not I have, the I has gone. And that has been realized. So it is called self-realization, God-realization. When the I doesn't exist anymore, it is then that one becomes divine. Therefore, meditation can be of tremendous importance to our life. Tremendous importance to our life. Your whole life can be transformed, transmuted, sublimated, made divine if you meditate regularly. If I look within and see defects, shortcomings, weaknesses, which I feel I cannot overcome, I am short-tempered, I am a bully, I am greedy, I am jealous, I am worrying, I am all the time full of anxieties, I can't overcome these, then I create an image within myself. Krishna, Buddha, let's say Buddha. And I take a mantra, Om Namo Tassa Arihato Sammasam Buddhatsa or Buddham Charanam Gacchami or Om Soham, any mantra you like. The mantra is used to link as a sort of channel for the consciousness to flow. Then I sit and begin to meditate. There is this imagination of Buddha. The Buddha is an image in me. But I am seeing this Buddha as an enlightened being, all perfect. There is no defect, there is no weakness. There is no imperfection in this Buddha. So, I visualize this Buddha within me, within my own heart, so small that he can be accommodated within my heart. And this Buddha to me is the soul, I'm sorry to use the word, savior. That is, I can't conquer my own weaknesses. I can't overcome my own defects and shortcomings. So, I take refuge in this Buddha. Why do I take refuge in him? Because I feel that he is perfect. He is still not real. He is only an imagination. So, I sit there and establish a contact by repeating a mantra, by making sure that my mind steadily looks at his image within. In total surrender, in faith, in devotion, I establish this link as the Swami established the link with the campfire. And I keep looking at this Buddha, looking at this Buddha. Oh Lord, you are wonderful. You are a genius. You are perfect. You are enlightened. In the course of this admiration, I draw closer and closer and closer so that the Buddha image seems to occupy the body of the meditator. When this happens, you actually feel that you are entering into Buddha. Buddha has become bigger than you. Then you have worked a wonder, because since you are in Buddha now, your mind cannot run away from Buddha. Yes? If you enthrone Buddha in your heart, the Buddha is still small. You are bigger than the Buddha. Your mind can run away from the Buddha. But if you are entering yourself into this Buddha, whatever your mind may do, it is still within this Buddha. And still it goes on. This meditation continues till you become of the same nature as Buddha. So this is a technique, this is a practice which can rid us of our weaknesses, of our failings, of our shortcomings, of our fears and anxieties, of our jealousies and pettiness and so on. To illustrate this, there is a lovely little story with which we shall conclude. A young boy went to a great master and he said, "Sir, teach me how to meditate." He said, "So simple. Sit down there." He put him in a room. "Repeat Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya." He said, "Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya." "What must I do, sir?" "Well, you know, Krishna." a lovely blue figure with a flute in hand. Meditate upon. And he closed the door, came away. After about an hour or so, he shouted, "Hey Ram!" He said, "Yes, Swamiji." "You are not meditating?" He said, "No, Swami. Can't meditate." He said, "What's wrong?" He said, he was a very honest boy. He said, "Swami, you know, I can't meditate upon this Krishna form. Impossible for me." He said, "Why?" And the old man asked, "What do you like in this world? Whom do you like in this world? Have you got a girlfriend or your father, mother, or what is it? What do you like most in this world?" He said, "Swami, you know, I'll tell you. I have a buffalo. Do you know what buffalo means? Water buffaloes. In India, they use it even for milking. Like cows, they milk the buffaloes and drink the milk also. And Swami, it's so beautiful. I don't know how to describe it to you. It's got huge, lovely horns. It's so, so beautiful, Swami. So I am very fond of that buffalo. So you told me to sit and close my eyes and meditate. As soon as I close my eyes, the buffalo comes." So he said, "That is wonderful." He said, "Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya," and meditate upon the buffalo. "That I can do," he said. This boy said, "That I can do. That's easy." Good. And the old man locked him up, came out. "Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya," and meditate upon the buffalo. An hour later, he shouted again, "Hey Ram!" No answer. The boy was in deep meditation. A day passed, 2 days passed, the boy wasn't even getting up. And then, the boy's father came looking for him. At his request, the yogi disturbed the boy's meditation and said, "Hey, come out!" And the boy said, "Sir, I can't come. The door is too small for me. My horns have grown so big that the door has become too small for me. I can't get out of this room now." One doesn't know whether he has actually been transformed into a buffalo or whether he was in such deep self-hypnosis that he actually felt that he had grown those horns. In the same way, if we meditate seriously enough, regularly enough, deeply enough, with that concentration, I have given you, on the basis of our scriptures, two illustrations, two aids. One is water flowing from one vessel to the other. And the other is as if a cobra is in your room. If the mind can be so alert and so continually flowing in one direction, then this inner transformation takes place. Let's try to meditate. Sit with your back straight. And for the first few minutes, listen to your breathing.
ஜாமேஷ்வந்திவர்தனம் குருவாருபந்தனான் வித்யோர்முக்ஷியமாம் தான். ஓம் திரியம்பகம் யஜாமே சுகந்திம் புஷ்டிவர்தனம் குருவாருகமிவந்தனான் வித்யோர்முக்ஷியமாம் தான். ஓம் திரியம்பகம் யஜாமே சுகந்திம் புஷ்டிவர்தனம் குருவாருகமிவந்தனான் வித்யோர்முக்ஷியமாம் தான். சர்வேஷாம் ஸ்வஸ்தி பவது, சர்வேஷாம் சாந்திர் பவது, சர்வேஷாம் பூர்ணம் பவது, சர்வேஷாம் மங்களம் பவது. சர்வே பவந்து சுகினஃ, சர்வே சந்து நிராமயாஃ, சர்வே பத்ராணி பஷ்யந்து மா கஷ்சித் துக்கதாஃ பவேத். அஸதோ மா சத்யமய, தமஸோ மா ஜோதிர்கமய, வித்யோ மா அமிர்தமய. ஓம் பூர்ணமத பூர்ணமிதம் பூர்ணாத் பூர்ணமுதச்யதே பூர்ணஸ்ய பூர்ணமாதாய பூர்ணமேவாவசிஷ்யதே. ஓம் சாந்தி சாந்தி.
Told us, I believe, that concentration is the first process leading to meditation. Is this so? You said that in the initial stages of concentration there's a tension which later disappears.
Yeah.
What is the source of the tension?
What's this source of the tension? It's probably because the mind is diversified to begin with. And you want to rope all those things in and focus it on one object. In that process, you see, if you want to hold a magnifying glass steady in your hand, you have to have some tension to hold it steady. That is, if you are an amateur, if you are not well trained, a person who is trained is able to do it without the tension. For instance, when you first learn to drive an automobile, you are tense. Once you become an expert, you may even be sleeping when you are driving a car.
You told us the story of you trying to watch for sleep to come, and when it came.
When it came, yeah.
Yeah. Does this mean that there are no degrees of meditation, that one either is in meditation or one is not?
One tends to take that view. Either it is meditation or it is not.
There seems to be no twilight zone where one is sort of meditating.
One does say so, even as one imagines that there is a state of half sleep, isn't it?
Yes, that's what
it.
I had in mind.
Yeah. But it's not sleep.
Yes.
Huh? Let's not bluff. Huh? We do say that there is a sort of half sleepy state. It's only a sleepy state. It's not sleep.
Is it so that one may select any object for meditation?
Again, what is the object of choosing the object, sir?
Yes, and that's why I'm asking the question. Whether in fact there is a preference of objects to choose for meditation.
Anything that is that's perfect. The object of meditation should, at least your mind should associate it with perfection. If it is not, then I am jumping from one imperfection to another imperfection. I am imperfect already, so I am choosing. I want to meditate. And if I am choosing another imperfect object, it seems to defeat its very purpose of meditation.
If you will permit me just one more question.
Please, sir.
This, I believe that tonight is the first time you have spoken of the heart in connection with meditation. Is the heart then the seat of meditation and not the mind?
What is the mind, sir?
I do not know. I do not know what the heart is either. And yet these are words that we use in our discussions.
Exactly. So, one has to have a focal point to start with. So it can be here, or it can be here, it can be anywhere. It can be the pit of the stomach, as some people would have it. So, but then, if you had watched the argument closely, though you start concentrating on your heart, the object is in your heart, there is this imagination. Very soon the image in grows to such an extent, that is when the time-space interval is eliminated.
Such distinctions, those distinctions between mind and heart are also eliminated, are they not?
Everything goes.
Sure.
Everything goes. And then you have a feeling, you have a feeling here, because if you started with the heart, you have a feeling here that you are sitting within Buddha. That Buddha has taken over. In other words, Buddha is not in your heart. You are probably in one small part of Buddha's body. It's a very blissful feeling. Again, it's imagination, there's no doubt about that. It's only my own projection. It's not the reality. But at least I am safe now, in as much as whatever I do, I can only roam around in Buddha. That's the advantage here. I can't get away from Buddha. So one has to have a focal point. You can have it here, you can have it there.